Hello, and welcome to another episode of Bridging the Gap, a podcast of the Governmental Accounting Standards Board. I am Joel Black, chair of the GASB. In today's episode, we are covering an exposure draft of an update to our implementation guidance. This implementation guide specifically covers subsidies as utilized in GASB Statement 103. The comment period on this exposure draft ends April 27th of 2026. And here, our host, Matt Broder, Vice President of Communications of the Financial Accounting Foundation, will talk with Lisa Parker, Senior Project Manager at the GASB, who is leading the project for this implementation guidance. Over to you, Matt.
Thank you, Joel. It is a pleasure to welcome Lisa Parker back to Bridging the Gap, one of our favorite guests. It's great to see you again, Lisa.
Thank you, Matt. It's great to be here.
And we are here to discuss a topic that has a very long title. You are here to tell us about the Implementation Guide Exposure Draft on Subsidies under Statement 103, which are financial reporting model improvements. That is the topic of today's episode. And so we will start by asking a very basic question. What is an implementation guide and why does the GASB issue them?
Excellent. Thank you, Matt. That's a great question. Implementation guides are actually staff documents that really constitute Category B authoritative GAAP. They do not establish new standards. Rather, they're really limited to clarifying, explaining, or elaborating on our standards that we've already issued. This particular implementation guide covers a specific statement and specific provisions within that statement. And of course, I'm talking about Statement 103, which are the financial reporting model improvements. And specifically here, the guide is aimed at giving guidance on subsidies. GASB issues these implementation guides to assist preparers in implementing the requirements within our authoritative standards. Technical inquiries, discussions in the field, and feedback that we receive from our GASAC members are received. And what happens is we react with this practical type of guidance to assist these stakeholders and other stakeholders who may have the very same questions.
Got it. So when was this guide issued and what is the purpose of this specific implementation guide on the subsidies under Statement 103?
So the purpose of this guide is to provide guidance that clarifies, explains, and elaborates on the requirements related to subsidies in Statement 103. There are many provisions within Statement 103, but this guide aims in particular at just the guidance around subsidies. The subsidies requirements in that statement represent a pretty significant change in the way that proprietary funds and business type activities of state and local governments present their inflows and outflows of resources as either operating or non-operating. So what I mean by that, Matt, is that previously, governments could really adopt their own internal policy as to what was considered operating, disclose that policy, and then abide by it for presentation purposes. So in many cases, what was happening is that subsidies were included in their definition of operating. Now, Statement 103 provides some pretty clear definitions as to what is operating and non-operating activities. So subsidies that are received and subsidies that are provided are included in the definition of non-operating activities. We include a definition of subsidies in the actual statement. So as you can imagine, this is generating some questions as to whether certain revenues and expenses actually meet the definition of subsidies. The exposure draft of the implementation guide was cleared for issuance by our board on February 10th of this year.
So we've narrowed this down to a very specific topic, subsidies. And it sounds like this could be a big deal for some governments depending on what their practices have been historically. So now that we've got this really pinned down to what exactly you're focused on. What are actually the key topics that this new guidance, this new implementation guide addresses, and what are the questions and answers that stakeholders will find in the guide?
That's another great question. So there are 8 new questions and answers and 1 amendment to a previously issued question and answer in this particular guide. The new questions relate to supplemental payments that are provided to hospitals, donations for scholarships received by higher education institutions, whether impact to published tuition rates is consideration when determining whether or not you have a subsidy. Research grants, again, received by higher education institutions. Taxes imposed. Passenger facility charges that are recognized by airports. How subsidies that are not capital subsidies should be reported. And then last but certainly not least, how subsidies should be classified if the resources are limited by the provider specifically to debt service for capital related debt.
I see. So you said that there are a number of new questions, which is great, but one of these amends a previous question, which I understand is not unusual as GAAP evolves, this happens. Let's talk a little bit about that one question that is an amendment of a previous question or topic. I'm probably not saying it the right way, but I'm sure you can explain it to our listeners.
Yeah, no, you're fine, Matt. So stakeholders questioned how subsidies that are limited specifically to the purpose of paying debt service of capital-related debt should be reported, and whether the guidance in that existing question, which was question 4.5 in Implementation Guide 2025-1, should be applied to those circumstances. So the original wording of that question was really limited to the acquisition of capital assets. However, some were viewing that answer as applicable to all subsidies, and they believed that subsidies in other capital-related circumstances, such as for the payment of debt service of capital-related debt, would be non-capital subsidies. But the principal purpose of the question in our new guide, or in that guide rather, was to convey that it's the intent of the provider of the subsidy, not the recipient of the subsidy, that is critical in determining whether the subsidy is capital or non-capital. However, because of the potential for the misapplication to broader circumstances than those presented in the question, this exposure draft proposes amending that question and answer to focus only on the principal purposes. So a new question and answer, though, in that 8 is being proposed regarding subsidies in other capital-related circumstances.
Okay. So I think it's safe to say that Statement 103 is a big deal. You could have had any number of questions in your implementation guidance. How is it that you and the GASB determine which questions to include in an implementation guide?
Sure. So the main drivers for populating an implementation guide are really the feedback that we receive from stakeholders as they attempt and try to implement our statements. Honestly, we really listen. We listen to the stakeholders and want to provide guidance to help them out in their implementation process. So how we receive that feedback is really in several ways. The first way is technical inquiries. When that technical inquiry hotline rings, people are asking great questions and answers, and we give them the answers. That's one way that we populate an implementation guide. Also, when we're on the road giving speeches, we're listening. We're listening to the stakeholders in the field as to what are the challenges that they're experiencing when implementing our standards. Also, GASAC, which is the Governmental Accounting Standards Advisory Council. We were just meeting with them this week on Monday and Tuesday. And they also have a period of time during their meeting when not only are they providing feedback on our existing projects, but where they discuss emerging issues and can represent to us some of the challenges that their membership is experiencing. And then last but certainly not least, on the GASB website, there is a place where stakeholders can email the director with challenges and concerns that they might have as they're working through implementation.
So what does it mean when when you say that implementation guides constitute category B gap?
So remember, right, the gap hierarchy really sets forth for us what constitutes gap for all state and local governments. It establishes, sort of think of it like the order of priority of pronouncements and other sources of accounting and financial reporting guidance that a governmental entity really should apply. So Statement 76 in our body of authoritative guidance introduced a simpler gap hierarchy with only two categories of authoritative gap. We call it Category A authoritative gap and Category B authoritative gap. So Category A, which is where a government would look first, are those officially established accounting principles. So I guess what I'm saying here are the GASB statements. Mm-hmm. That right. would be first, Category right. A gap. Then Category B gap, according to Statement 76, are things like technical bulletins, implementation guides, like we're talking about today, and literature of the AICPA that's cleared specifically by the GASB. Everything else other than that Category A and Category B gap would constitute non-authoritative guidance.
Okay. So getting back to this implementation guide, you mentioned earlier that it was issued in February. Mm-hmm. The deadline for comments from stakeholders is?
So the deadline for comment is April 27th.
Okay.
You can find the exposure draft on our GASB website, www.gasb.org. And in that document, you'll actually see the options for providing input to bring your voice to the GASB board table. And what you're going to find there in that document is that you can submit a formal comment letter, an email to the director, or we also now also have an electronic feedback form. And there's a link to that electronic feedback form in the actual document. What I will say, Matt, is we want feedback from everybody, and feedback is most helpful when the stakeholder explains why they might disagree or agree, and at the same time, providing some suggestions to us for how it could be improved. But the thing I really want to stress is that every voice matters.
Yeah. So what happens after the deadline? What goes to the board or goes to the staff?
Sure. So after the deadline, that's when the staff works to really accumulate all of the feedback that we've received. And we kind of put it into bite-sized pieces based on the topics. In this case, it's pretty simple. They're all right. on subsidies.
Right.
And then the board will re-deliberate all of that feedback. So the reason why I say every voice matters is because the board sees every comment that gets submitted mm-hmm. on every due process document. Yeah,
and they have not made final decisions yet.
That is correct, because it's an exposure draft.
Yeah, so let's have that deadline one more time.
So that deadline is April 27th. And remember, every voice matters.
Terrific. Well, it's been great to have you back on the show, Lisa. Always great to see you. And thank you for helping our stakeholders better understand what's happening with this implementation guide.
You're very welcome, Matt. My pleasure.
Thank you all so much for tuning in with us to this episode of Bridging the Gap. We hope you'll join us again, and please be sure to visit gasb.org/podcast to subscribe and to stay updated on future episodes. You can also follow the GASB on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X, previously Twitter. Bridging the Gap is a production of the Financial Accounting Foundation, produced by myself, Eileen Foley, and brought to audiovisual life by Patrick Dorsman. So until next time, keep balancing those books, crunching those numbers, and embracing the art of financial reporting.